As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The latest episode of the Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by my co-host Matt Fortuna. After Notre Dame's fairly dramatic 41-24 victory over Syracuse, it starts with a pick six. It ends with Notre Dame sort of just bludgeoning Syracuse into the JMI dome turf.
Block punts.
Yeah, JMA, excuse me. It was interesting in the fact that it was a highly complementary game by Notre Dame in terms of the defense, the special teams, and half of the offense. And so Notre Dame gets a top 25 win. They will almost certainly be bowl eligible now, which was not, you know, highly likely. But, you know, they needed a game like this to have some breathing room going into November. And they have no answers with their pass game right now at all. There's a lot for Notre Dame to feel good about. Certainly a much more good than bad today. But I felt like the pass game part feels a little bit ominous right now with Clemson visiting next week, because I don't think Notre Dame is going to be able to run 56 times for 246 yards and three touchdowns against Clemson.
246 yards only. I mean, kind of skewed because of the end, but 4.4 yards per rush. It felt like a lot more than that because it felt like they were able to do whatever they wanted on the ground for the most part.
Very efficient.
And we saw them essentially do that strategy in the second half. Drew Pine, I think, attempted 5 second half passes because it just wasn't necessary. I mean, Syracuse was lifeless offensively. I don't know whether Garrett Schrader was hurt, whether he's banged up, whether he just was ineffective, but clearly they needed a spark offensively and they got it from Carlos Del Rio Wilson, who probably scared Notre Dame and their fans a lot in the second half. I mean, when it gets to 24-17 and they have the ball and you're seeing Notre Dame struggling to move the ball through the air the way they are, it's very easy to picture a path for this to unravel for Notre Dame. But they got a big pick courtesy of a deflection of Howard Cross and Maris Leifau being there to corral it in. And that was pretty much all she wrote. It was, Syracuse certainly not play the part or look the part of a ranked team of a team that probably should have beaten Clemson last week. And we talked a little bit about this on our pregame show, midweek show earlier this week, and just didn't really know what to expect. Didn't really know what to expect out of either team this season. But Syracuse in particular, I think, was about as much of an anomaly as a 6-1 highly ranked team could be. And they did not look very good out there today. Notre Dame really imposed its will. I would say both offensively and defensively for the most part, and special teams. Yeah. And I put this out there, but if anyone's having a better year on that staff than Brian Mason, I don't know who it is. I mean, he's made such a big difference in such a short period of time. I mean, he had the one block at the end. And I don't know if they officially credited the other one. I think they did. Got a piece of another one earlier.
He affected it enough that Mason jumped up like and celebrated with him as he was running to the sidelines. And that's like, we talked to Mason last week during midweek access, and I wanted to do a story on punt block, which now he's sort of writing for me, which I appreciate it, Brian, if you're listening. It's a weapon that every punt is affected because they know Notre Dame is so good. Like, whether they block it or not, your operation is sped up because you know that Notre Dame has a block on at some point that they can cut loose at any moment. So that's been, yeah, I've never been as interested or at the edge of my seat when the other team punts as I am now. I mean, we've gone from like fair catch central to like, this is Notre Dame choosing violence against the opposing punter at any moment. It's what a sea change that has been for Notre Dame football program. I know it's minor if you don't watch closely, but all of our listeners do. Like, it's fun to watch Notre Dame try to block punts now.
It is. And Brandon Joseph, you talk about fair catch central. Brandon Joseph, who's been the punt returner this year, makes his presence felt in this game. Otherwise, defensively, from the get-go with the interception and should have had two, had one wiped out by penalty at the end. We can now officially say, I think, they have as many punt blocks as takeaways, right? 5-5 this year.
It is 5-5, yeah.
Imagine
and
that.
It was, you know, that was another thing about today that I thought was significant when I mentioned complimentary football. They had 14 points off turnovers today. They had 10 points off turnovers in the first seven games combined, which is shocking. And that doesn't even include the punt block that turned into like a 5-yard touchdown drive to Estime, right. Nor does it include Syracuse completely indefensible move right before halftime to go for it on fourth down near midfield. That, I mean, if Marcus Freeman did that, if Brian Kelly did that, we would be killing him for it for a long, long time. I don't know what the heck Dino Babers was thinking, especially with a quarterback who you know is banged up in that moment at a time. It's 4th and 7 and you're averaging 2.6 yards per play.
You're at the 39, right? I think the ND 39.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys who's always like, go for it, go for it, go for it. So anytime I see someone go for it, it doesn't work out. I hate to be the hypocrite who's like, well, you shouldn't have gone for it. I don't mind going for it. I just thought the play calling throughout the day from Syracuse left a lot to be desired.
The end around on 2nd and 1, like, I'm not sure I've seen a worse offensive play call.
They had a couple 2nd and 3rd and short plays where I'm just like, you realize you only need 1 yard here, right? Or 2 yards here, right? It was very perplexing. Robert and I, who's been the play caller there, has had a phenomenal season otherwise. But I feel like with the Dino Babers coach team, there are always going to be a couple hair pulling moments throughout a game where you're just kind of like, what's he trying to do here? Because it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Obviously, making the quarterback switch, you know, had the potential to prove beneficial for Syracuse. I mean, Garrett Trader was just 5 of 14 for 35 yards in the first half with one touchdown, one interception. And I think Del Rio Wilson, topped that on maybe his first drive, if not his first drive, then his first two drives in the second half. He definitely injected some life into that building. But I thought it was fun, encouraging, whatever the word you want to use, to see Notre Dame impose its will on a game through something other than the ground game, which they did do here. But like the defense certainly coming up with the big plays when they did, special teams doing it again. We haven't, I mean, again, 5 turnovers on the year, 2 of them came today. Like, they had not played a game like that defensively all season long, and they did against an offense that had shown signs of being really good this year. So I think that's encouraging. I think it's encouraging, especially going into next week's game against Clemson. And Michael Mayer is still very, very good at football. Right. He made a catch literally sitting down. I believe he recovered an onside kick. He had another big catch that set up a touchdown. One of the more impressive 3-catch 54-yard days you'll find. The performance does not match the statistical production. He was very, very good.
It was nice that he could do it at a place where John Mackey actually played his college football as well. So at this point, if the Mackey Award overlooks Michael Mayer this time, they're doing it out of a place of hate. Mayer is basically the entire offense in terms of the pass game right now. He had 3 catches for 54 yards, 7 targets. Notre Dame's receivers finished with 8 targets. That's a pretty common stat line as well. They're not in a healthy position with their pass game right now with Drew Pine. I'm not sure that there's a market improvement out there for him. From 9 of 19 for a buck 16, he was 1 of 5 for 11 yards in the second half. I sort of put out on Twitter like midway through the first half, guess Drew Pine's final stat line, because I figured it would be something like this, but look better than it did. They have to figure something out with him because they can't. I don't think They could definitely beat Navy and Boston College playing this way. They might even be able to beat USC playing this way. But they're not going to beat Clemson being a run first, run only offense. Like, I could see Notre Dame, I could see USC being scattershot enough that Notre Dame runs the ball effectively. I realize they lead the nation in turnover margin, so maybe they're due for a few turnovers on their own. But next week against Clemson is going to be a hell of a litmus test for this offensive line, which is not playing well. It's playing phenomenally well right now. It's to watch them move Syracuse's defensive front down the field basically at will from the beginning of the game was impressive. This, it looked like, you know, when we watch offensive lines are playing well in the fourth quarter, they're like, oh, they're clearly wearing down the opponent. Like, it looked like Syracuse was worn down at the beginning of the game. That's how well Notre Dame's offensive line is playing.
Yeah, before the quarterback switch, I'm like, what's the final score going to be here? Like, how much is Notre Dame going to win by, right? That was the question, at least I had watching the game. Obviously, things changed a little bit in the second half. But the offensive line really is looking like that group that we all kind of envisioned back in August, back when they brought Harry Heisen back to coach this unit. They've been playing phenomenally so far. It's going to be a hell of a test next week against Clemson. I mean, I'll be curious. You know, I still can't, and I'm sure our listeners can't get out of their heads that when Tim Murray came on our show about a month ago now, one of his Vegas experts said Clemson would be a 1-point underdog to Notre Dame. That was, of course, before Notre Dame had lost to Stanford. Vegas has been down on Clemson all year, and Clemson obviously showed enough vulnerabilities last week against what we saw was not a very great Syracuse team, where I think the most optimistic Notre Dame fan can talk themselves into this being a better game than advertised. I'll be fascinated to see how Vegas ultimately judges this one pregame. I'm sure Clemson will be favored, but because of the way Clemson looked last time out, I can talk myself into this being a really good game if Notre Dame plays pretty flawlessly offensively and if DJ struggles and they don't know what they're doing quarterback-wise at Clemson. But
you're more optimistic than me for the first time in the history of this podcast about a Notre Dame-Clemson matchup, because I came out of today thinking like they're going to sort of lean, they're going to stick their head in a fan against Clemson with the run game, because they cannot rely on Drew Pine to throw it. You know, his touchdown pass was a 3-yarder to Jaden Thomas off play action down by the goal line. That was a smart play, well executed. But I has sort of started charting drop eights. Like, how does Pine fare against that? The last 2 weeks, he was 1 of 7 for 8 yards against drop eight. His completion to Colsey in the second half was against drop eight, to be fair. But it feels like when teams play pure coverage against Notre Dame, that Drew Pine has a very, very difficult finding the places where the ball needs to go. That's, I think, one of the first things I want to watch on the review of this is how much did Syracuse do it on Pine's 19 passing attempts and how many were completed? Because I think even the interception that he forced to Mayer in triple coverage when both linebackers fell off was a drop eight situation. So it's, there's definitely a book on Pine out there now that maybe...
No pun intended.
Yeah, but it was fun to see Malik Zaire and Ian Book get into like a Twitter back and forth about Drew Pine briefly today.
No, I missed that.
Yeah.
Sounds more exciting than the game.
Yeah, you can guess which side that Ian Book was on there. But that's where Reese and Pine need to put their heads together and be like, all right, when this happens, this is what you do. And it may just be you take off and fall forward for 3 yards instead of standing back there. Like, he got absolutely crushed in the second half. I think that was in the third quarter. It's hard for me to get my head around. This guy has played enough football and still is uncertain about what he's seeing in front of him. They got to have a come to touchdown Jesus moment, the two of those guys, to figure out, all right, here's when they do this, you do this. Stop thinking, start throwing or start running.
Yeah, I don't think touchdown Jesus was involved with their exchange that surprisingly enough did not go viral, but the ESPN harped on one when I think it was in the third quarter, Katie George was describing how much Drew Pine likes the hard coaching from Tommy Reese, asked for it. And then they showed an exchange where all I made out of it was, you have a job to do, get it. bleeping done. And then there was a lot more after that. It was a lot more animated than the one that went viral during Pine's first start against Cal back in week three. I was, again, pleasantly surprised that didn't like turn into a thing. But when you win by, 17 points, those issues tend to fall by the wayside a little bit.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This Clemson defensive line is classic Clemson, right? I mean, they're just loaded with top-end talent. Future first round picks there. They haven't always played together, but they are coming off a bye week. Presumably will be as healthy as they've been. To your point earlier, their rushing defense, seventh in the country, giving up just 89 yards on the ground per game. They're good. They're really good. I mean, matchup wise, it's really, really tough for Notre Dame. I'm not by any means saying they're going to win this game, but I don't need the way I am with Clemson, Notre Dame. I feel like you are with Notre Dame and USC, because I don't really see a path to Notre Dame beating USC. I could maybe see one with Clemson just because I think Clemson's played with fire a little bit too much this season and will eventually get burnt. Maybe that's in the ACC title game. I don't know, but it's a night game. It'll be the first. I mean, look, there was as much of an environment as is humanly possible the last time they were there, given the limitations on the crowd.
Right.
And there was a field storming, and the crowd, I think, had an effect on the game. It will be different this time around. Now, look, maybe that works against Notre Dame, because as we talked earlier, Clemson fans of this generation have not had a chance to go to Notre Dame, and I'm sure they're going to eat up the chance to do that this season, especially with this being their last road game, especially with their team being undefeated and right in the thick of things right now.
Road game?
This comes out. Their last ACC road game was 2 weeks ago at Florida State. Yeah. They've had a very front-loaded schedule, which is why I'm not as down on them as everyone else, but certainly there are flaws there that someone I think will eventually expose. I'm not sure if it will be Notre Dame with what we saw from them today and what we've seen from them all season long, but definitely the offensive line is just trending in the right direction. It'll be nice, maybe not for Notre Dame fans, but it'll be nice to see the name's escaping me right now. Will Shipley, sorry, the running back.
Yes.
Notre Dame really wanted. That guy's a dude. Like, he's really freaking good. He's a game changer back there. Their offensive line is, I wouldn't say great, but it's definitely not as bad as it was last year, and he's more than made up for that this year. Even in victory today for Notre Dame, there's still a handful of plays. I know this is every team everywhere, win or lose, but there's still a handful of plays, and you just went over a bunch of them offensively. Even defensively, that just make you wonder, like, what are they going to figure out? I keep coming back to we're talking about bad play calling with Dino Babers. They handed it off to Sean Tucker on 3rd and 8, and he got it because one of the Adam Malolas couldn't wrap him up. And like, I felt like that was a give up play call that turned into, once again, a first down. And we've seen way too many of those on 3rd and long situations against Notre Dame this season. You know, we saw it with BYU. We saw it last week, even with UNLV, with their quarterback. So there's still a lot to be cleaned up there. They're going to have to clean it up next week. But I'm definitely a lot more excited about next week's game after today than I was coming into it.
Yeah.
Only for the final score.
Yeah. You mentioned sort of like weird defensive plays. I thought the first touchdown drive was bizarre. The way that they had, I think it was almost like they were playing kind of a 4-4 vibe with Xavier Watts down in the box, leaving Benjamin Morrison, who's 6-foot-ish, against Aronde Gaston, who's 6'5", definitely. And it was just like pitch and catch. That's an easy touchdown. Like, they didn't even really make Schrader work for it. So it was, the other team is allowed to score, is allowed to have yards, allowed to have big plays. But I do think the big plays against Notre Dame are weirder than they are at other places nationally. I have no data to support my position. But I feel like Notre Dame gives up some really bizarre plays. And, you know, not Syracuse had at least two big time drops today that would they have changed the outcome of the game? Probably not. I mean, definitely not. But certainly would have churned up the volume here in the JMA Dome, as I look up at the sign to make sure I don't say JMI, more than it was. So I think Notre Dame's defense is just, it's pretty good. Isaiah Foskey is playing a lot better football. I think JD Bertrand was phenomenal in the first half. Hopefully people who are skeptical of his athleticism and skill level watch today with a better appreciation for just how good he is. You know, Jack Kaiser made a really nice play on that second and one end around that made no sense. You know, Brandon Joseph should have had two picks. Maris Liefau did have a pick. It was nice to see a more broad base group of guys make plays for the defense than just hoping Isaiah Foskey, you know, and you know, getting into the third quarter pick, which was so important in the game and the flow, like that wasn't just like a bad throw. It was like Howard Cross got his hand up and tipped it, and Maris Liefau made a really athletic play to get it. So it's not, you know, sometimes the plays are just there for you to pick up the ball and run with it. Like Notre Dame had to go out and force the issue a little bit, and I think it was good to see more guys on defense be able to do that today than just Foskey and maybe just Bertrand. This was, you know, certainly the Brandon Joseph I thought Notre Dame was getting the whole time. I was surprised that he said it was his first pick six of his entire football career, high school included.
Wow. That's surprising.
Would not have guessed that.
Me neither. Speaking of first, Deion Colsey, 3 catches, 44 yards. Welcome back.
I think he's just welcome.
Welcome. Welcome is a good way to put it. I hadn't seen any of him. I'm not sure he even had target this year. I know he's banged up earlier this year.
Yeah, no targets this year.
You know, it was nice to see. At least I think it was nice to see. Marcus Freeman really getting after the reps after, I think it was the first quarter, 3rd and 1 from the 5. Notre Dame's running hurry up, and the reps basically let Syracuse change their entire personnel and put their hand on the ball and do not let Notre Dame go hurry up. And Freeman is losing it. And I don't know what, if there was any like actual explanation for all that went above my head, because it didn't make sense to me in real time. I thought it was good to, I don't know. I thought that's a fire you want to see from your head coach during a series that doesn't make really any sense.
Yeah. One, I agree with you 100%. That was my first question to him after the game, was like, what happened in that moment? And he was like, I thought they shouldn't have been able to sub. And apparently behind him, somebody on Notre Dame's defense had taken a couple steps onto the field and then taken a couple steps off. And as soon as that is sort of, as soon as that happens, if you sub, you're allowed to do it. So he was just like, yeah, I get it. They explained to me after, I mean, he basically, the way he described it was it wasn't like an intentional, I'm going to rip somebody a new one just to do it. I thought that it's, you know, for a younger head coach who's sort of new to it, kind of the new guy in class, like, do you want to be just tearing into officials every moment? He seems like no, like is pretty reserved with them. So I wondered if maybe it was a little bit more of a comfort level that I'm going to go after this guy opposed to having just a pleasant conversation with him. But I mean, he was like probably at least 5 yards beyond the coach's box, right, when it was happening. So I think from Notre Dame's point of view, that it was good to see. I don't know how significant it is, but I think it's something. It's worth noting.
Well, I appreciate that philosophy because I think like to your point, it if you do it less, it makes the time to do it that much more remarkable. I mean,
yeah,
purple face Brian Kelly became a meme because like he was purple face a lot and he got angry a lot, and that becomes very easy to, at least from the outside world, to tune out, and probably from the inside world as well. I mean, there's just, you know, so many, when you're mad about everything, it just kind of becomes your natural state of being. I think when you do it with purpose, it has a better effect on your team. Another Michael Mayer note, broke Tyler Eifert's receiving yards record for Notre Dame tight end. He beat his receptions record back at the BYU game. I guess I'm surprised, like, it didn't take him long because it's still only 33 games into his career. But, like, at this point, I'm just, like, surprised there are any records left that he doesn't have that involve tight ends in Notre Dame because he's been that good this year.
Yeah, no, he's phenomenal. I wish that he had come in post-game just so I would have asked him, like, what mess he was talking to the Syracuse player after he recovered the onside kick, because, like, he clearly was staring somebody down and pointing at them, and I wanted to know what the heck that was all about, because I don't know, like, who's talking crap to Michael Mayer. Like, that just doesn't seem like a great career choice to me.
DBs like to run their mouths, you know, and they have to have short memories. That's kind of... there are plenty of DBs who I think are bold enough to do it, even if it doesn't ultimately work out for them.
It's, you know, it's a choice.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Why don't we sort of wrap up on this topic? We sort of danced around it a little bit, but, like, because every game is its own season, and we all come away with, like, these great grand takeaways about, like, what does it all mean? What do you think today does for the rest of the season for Notre Dame, other than all but assure that it will play in a hopefully San Diego, maybe Florida bowl game at the end of the season?
String together back-to-back wins, regardless of competition. I think you talk yourself into next week. Not saying you're going to win, but, like, if they lost to Syracuse today, I mean, we would have completely write next week's game off. Like, it'd be a decent environment. It'd be a big name opponent, a top five opponent, all that jazz. Cool. I think if you're Marcus Freeman and, you know, coaches or part-time psychologists, you take out the game film of Syracuse versus Clemson and you take out the game film of us versus Clemson or us versus Syracuse, and you just talk these guys into convincing themselves they're going to win. It's not quite what Brian Kelly did when they beat them in 2020, but there was a lot of psychological warfare going on that season.
Oh, yeah.
In the build up to that game and to that night. And even when the fans did storm the field afterward, I remember I think it was Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah who came out and got asked about fans storming the field. And he goes, "Yep, Kelly told us pregame they're going to storm right here, so we got to get out this way." And he started calling him Prophet Kelly and stuff. But that's one of those bold moves that obviously paid off because he knew the temperature of his team, knew what they were capable of. And it was a great game, and it came down to the final play, but they did it. Don't think the stakes are – well, I know the stakes aren't quite as high for Notre Dame this time, but they could certainly play spoiler in the college football playoff field with this one. And, again, they're getting a top-five opponent at home. They do not get opportunities like this all that often. I mean, before that last Clemson one, what was the last top? I mean, the top 10, the only one I think was Stanford in 18, which was by no means an actual top 10 team. It just happened to be undefeated in the third or fourth weekend of September. So certainly there's more excitement, more oomph going into this week's game. And look, even if they play them close and lose, you never know how you'll recover from that emotionally. But I do think it's a little bit more than just, okay, they're going to go 2-2 from here on out. BC lost 13-3 today, by the way, to UConn. Like, that is a bad football team. Phil Dracovic got hurt, didn't finish it, but they weren't moving the ball well with them before that. That was not pretty. By the way, do we know what Al Golden's like against the option? Because I think he struggled against Georgia Tech when he was at Miami.
Let's just take it one game at a time, man.
Okay.
What do I always say? I agree with most of that. I do think it makes – not that Notre Dame has, like, a free roll against Clemson now after beating Syracuse, but you're not staring at, like, a two-game losing streak. Hopefully this lets Notre Dame go out and play a little bit more freely next week. I could see them being very, very tight if they had lost today, right. And then having to go against Clemson. Hopefully, you know, for Notre Dame's sake, it also kind of cuts the defense loose a little bit with the really should have been three turnovers, but was two. That they can go out and make some plays. I think that we know pretty much everything there is to know about Notre Dame already. I think that's definitely good enough to go 7-5, might be good enough to go 8-4. And I think, like, look, If you said Notre Dame split USC and Clemson to finish 8-4, I'm not saying at the beginning of the year you would have taken it, but maybe at halftime of Cal you would have taken it. It would show some improvement with the program, which that was the biggest thing you wanted to see from Marcus Freeman as year one. Like, could Notre Dame get better as the season went on? I think if they finished 8-4, you would have to concede that they got better. But going to 8-4 meant you absolutely had to win today. And I think today's performance, they won. This didn't feel like the BYU game when Syracuse was coming back, where you're like, oh boy. And it certainly didn't feel like Oklahoma State. So I think that's significant too, that you were able to sort of stem the tide against an opponent that was kind of, you know, fumbling around a little bit, trying to get back in the game, but had gotten this crowd back in it. And Notre Dame was able to sort of right the ship within the game, which is not something I think has been a great strength of theirs to date.
No, I think we know who they are, and there are levels within who they are. And we saw, at least from a trenches standpoint, pretty close to the top level of what they are, what they can be, and what they're going to need to be if they're going to spring an upset here down the stretch. I mean, when they did beat Clemson in 2020, they were the tougher team. They were better on the offensive line and defensive line, and they ultimately clinched that game, I believe, either with a sack or forcing DJ Uiagalelei to basically throw it away on the final play of double overtime. So we know who they are. We think we know what they can be. I think doing it today against the opponent that, at least on paper, you could talk yourself into being really good, even if Syracuse probably isn't that good, was a good confidence boost for this group. And I think it adds extra excitement heading into this week, heading into November, which is where Brian Kelly always made his name early on at Notre Dame. I think he went only lost one November game his first 2 years there after some uneven Septembers and Octobers. So we'll see what this team is about when Clemson comes to town next Saturday night. But I'm definitely a lot more excited for it after today.
Yeah. Will you be joining me in the press box next week?
Of course I'll be there. Northwestern Ohio State's at 11 a.m. So I'm going to do my best to see 2 top 5 teams in one day. I don't know if I'll be able to stay the whole game, nor do I think I'll need to, considering it's Ohio State and Northwestern. But I want to see the Buckeyes again in person. And I want to see Clemson in person as well. So
yeah, it can beat traffic on Lakeshore Drive to get down to South Bend, hop on the toll road from there. It raises the stakes and the excitement over next week. And what do we love more than anything in college football? We love big games that feel like they're big. And I think next week feels a little bit bigger now because of how Notre Dame played today. So I think there's plenty to write about for me off this one. There'll be plenty of for both of us to cover this week heading in towards Clemson following Notre Dame's 41-24 victory over Syracuse here at the JMA Dome.
JMA Wireless.
Good God. I have to say, I was very pleased with the wireless connectivity here. So they have a good sponsor, JMA.
It's like Sox fan. I feel like a Sox fan who's calling Comiskey Park, whatever they call it now. Like, I still call it Comiskey. I still call it the Carrier Dome. I still call it the Sears Tower. Like, these places have one name only, and they'll always forever be known as just one name. By the way, did you take David Hale up on any of his local brewery and bathroom recommendations?
I did not, but there is tonight for that. I would say we went to Myers Creek last night. It was good. The beer was better than the food. And we'll see about tonight. I think there's plenty to write, but it's only 5:15 as we're wrapping up this podcast. So we'll see what good kind of trouble we can get into this evening around Syracuse. So until our midweek podcast next week, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.